Imagine you're carrying a lit bomb in the back of a moving truck.
Which is already a pretty stressful situation.
Right. Very stressful. And you know that if this bomb touches even a single speck of dust, just one speck, it will instantly vaporize the entire vehicle in this massive burst of pure energy.
I mean, that sounds exactly like a pitch for some sci-fi action thriller.
It really does. But the crazy thing is, that isn't a movie pitch. That literally happened this week in a real physics laboratory.
Yeah, it's wild.
It is. But before we get to the antimatter, because we are definitely going to talk about that, welcome to the deep dive.
Glad to be here.
So we are zeroing in on a single, highly concentrated briefing today. We're looking at the Atomic News Tech and AI Daily Newsletter from March 26th, 2026.
And there is a lot to cover in this one.
There really is. Our mission for you today is to basically cut through all the noise and make sense of this massive underlying tension in the tech world right now.
Yeah, there's this real tug of war happening.
Exactly. We are watching this real-time battle between brute force technological power on one side and then clever, highly efficient design on the other.
Right, the whole work smarter, not harder shift.
Completely. We're looking at everything from the suddenly very visible limits of artificial intelligence to those mind-bending breakthroughs in physics we just hinted at. And we are going to extract the exact knowledge you need to stay ahead of the curve. So, okay, let's unpack this.
When you scan the landscape in this briefing, there is this prevailing assumption that has driven the last few years of development.
You mean the bigger is always better mindset?
Yeah, exactly. The idea that if we just throw more data and more compute at our problems, magic will inevitably happen.
Right.
But these sources today are loudly pointing out that the era of just using a bigger hammer, it's coming to a very abrupt end.
It is. And to see exactly where the handle of that hammer is splintering, we have to look at the very edge of artificial intelligence.
The ARC AGI-3 report.
Yes, Francois Chollet and the ARC AGI team just released the third iteration of their benchmark. Now, if you just casually track mainstream tech headlines, you know, you're constantly told that large language models are passing the bar exam.
Or writing flawless code.
Right, or acing all these standardized tests. But this ARC AGI-3 report confirms what they are calling the brute force wall.
Which is a huge reality check.
It really is. Current models are utterly failing to learn new abstract rules in context with anything even close to human-like efficiency. The report states point blank that we are missing a fundamental architectural piece for fluid intelligence.
What's fascinating here is the actual mechanics of that failure. Because you have
Yeah.
to ask, why do they ace the bar exam but fail this?
Right. Why did it disconnect?
Well, standard benchmarks are inadvertently testing a model's ability to recall patterns it has already ingested billions of times during its training phase.
Like it's just regurgitating things it's seen before.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But RCAGI forces a completely different mechanism. It presents these visual, abstract logic puzzles that the AI has literally never encountered before.
So there's no cheat sheet.
None. To solve them, the model cannot rely on its pre-trained statistical weights. It has to deduce the underlying rule in that exact moment
Right.
and apply it to a novel situation. And despite their staggering size, modern LLMs just hit a brick wall here.
Wow.
Yeah, scaling up a training run with another trillion tokens of data doesn't move the needle, because predicting the next word in a sequence is simply not the same mechanism as actual fluid reasoning.
Okay, think of it like this. It's like a student who has perfectly memorized every single textbook in the university library.
That's a great way to look at it.
Right. Like they can recite any historical date, define any complex term, whatever you ask,
Yeah.
but then you hand them an open-ended practical exam.
Something that requires actual thought.
Exactly. Like a completely novel chemistry problem they have to solve on the fly in a physical lab. And they just freeze.
They don't know what to do.
They fail entirely because they lack actual fluid intelligence. They are projecting this illusion of intelligence, but it's really just built on a mountain of memorized data.
Precisely. We have essentially engineered the ultimate rote memorization engines.
But not reasoning engines.
No, we haven't built reasoning engines. And that realization is forcing a hard, fast pivot in how developers approach problem-solving today.
Wait, but if scaling up parameters and just building bigger data centers is heading diminishing returns, how are developers keeping the momentum going today without just building bigger data centers? Like, if brute force is dead, what's next?
The workaround is smart infrastructure. And we actually see it in the briefing with an open source AI system called ATS.
I saw that. ATLAs is super interesting.
Right. ATLS doesn't try to be a monolithic trillion parameter giant. Instead, it takes a much smaller, highly efficient 14 billion parameter model.
Which is tiny compared to the big ones.
Exactly, it's tiny. And it wraps it in intelligent scaffolding. It uses clever self-reflection loops.
What does that mean, self-reflection loops?
Well, instead of just spitting out a first-pass answer and hoping it's right, the system is designed to generate a response and then critique its own code in a hidden secondary step.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it finds the errors and rewrites the code before you ever even see the final output.
So rather than relying on one massive monolithic brain to get it right on the first try, it's setting up a system of checks and balances.
Exactly.
It's like an ER triage nurse. Instead of sending every single patient with a mild cough to the most expensive, overworked brain surgeon in the hospital.
Which is a terrible use of resources.
Right. But that is essentially what we do when we use a massive LLM for every single query. But 8 TLAs, it quickly assesses the problem, routes the heavy lifting to the right specialized tools, and lets a highly capable, cheaper local clinic handle the rest of the logic.
And the results of that triage approach really speak for themselves.
Yeah, the benchmark scores were crazy.
They were. By using this smart infrastructure, this small 14B ATLA's model is actually outperforming massive top-tier models like Claude Sonnet 4.5 on coding benchmark.
That's huge.
It is. Developers are realizing they don't need to climb the brute force wall. They can just build a smarter, lighter ladder to go right over it.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting. Because to run those local, efficient models, you still need the physical hardware to process them, right?
Yeah, the hardware is always the catch.
Historically, you were hit with what we call the VRAM tax from the major tech giants who basically held a monopoly on hardware.
NVIDIA, mostly.
Yeah, NVIDIA. But Intel has just launched the Arc Pro B70 AI workstation card. And the raw specs on this thing are impressive.
Very impressive.
It's got 32 gigabytes of GDDR6 memory, pushing 367 TOPS.
Trillions of operations per second.
Exactly. 367 trillion operations per second of AI performance.
Mm-hmm.
But the actual headline, the thing everyone is talking about, is the price point. It's launching at just $949.
Which is a direct, incredibly aggressive undercut of NVIDIA's pricing structure.
Completely. To put this in perspective for you, getting 32 gigs of VRAM for under $1,000, it isn't just a nice discount. It's like finding premium, high-octane rocket fuel in the discount aisle of a grocery store.
I like that.
And the reason that 32 gigabytes is the magic number here, it comes down to the mechanics of local AI.
Right. Fitting the model into memory.
Exactly. If you want to run a highly capable model, and the briefing specifically notes Qwen 3.5 to a 7B or Llama 370B, you have to physically load the model's parameters into the active memory of the graphics card.
All at once?
Yes. If the model requires 24 gigs of space and you only have 16, it doesn't just run slower, it flat out crashes. You hit a hard physical wall.
Right. By breaking that price barrier, Intel is actively democratizing the research layer.
Giving it to the people.
Yeah. A solo developer can now run inference entirely locally without renting expensive cloud architecture.
Which changes everything.
It does. Huh. But what's really compelling is that this scrappy resource allocation isn't just happening in silicon. It's happening in the software layer simultaneously.
Oh, you're talking about Flow2 API.
Exactly. Take the Flow2 API tool currently trending on GitHub in today's briefing.
I saw that. It's built specifically for Gemini 3 Pro, right? How exactly does Flow2 API work under the hood?
So it functions as a load balance reverse proxy and an account pool manager.
Okay, break that down for me.
Sure. When developers use a cloud AI like Gemini 3 Pro, they are severely bottlenecked by API rate limits.
Right. The platform only lets you send a certain number of requests per minute.
Exactly. Flow2 API bypasses this by multiplexing requests across a pooled group of developer accounts.
Clever.
It is. It automatically manages the authentication tokens, refreshes them when they expire, and here's the best part, it aggressively caches responses.
So it remembers what it already answered.
Yes. So if three different users ask the API for the exact same block of code, Flow2 API intercepts the second and third requests and serves the answer from its local cache.
Wow. Saving the compute cycle entirely.
Exactly. It's wildly efficient.
It's incredibly clever. You have hardware like the Intel B70 eliminating the local bottleneck, and tools like Flow2 API wringing every single drop of efficiency out of the cloud bottleneck.
It's a two-pronged attack.
It is. But wait, let's look at the physical realities of all this compute power. Because whether you're running a heavy local AI rig on an Intel card, or we're looking at, say, powering the global EV infrastructure, the foundational bottleneck is always energy storage.
Always the battery.
Right. You can write the most efficient routing loops in the world, but if the power grid can't handle the draw, or the car battery weighs too much, the tech just stalls out.
Energy density dictates the physical limits of our civilization. It really always has.
Which brings us to a major report from Electrek in today's briefing. We have a massive sodium-ion EV battery breakthrough.
This is a big one.
It is. They are reporting an 11-minute charge time that delivers a 450-kilometer range. Now, I have to stop right here because I know exactly what you're thinking listening to this.
We've heard this before.
We have been hearing about miraculous battery breakthroughs for years. Every 6 months, there's a press release about solid-state this or graphene that.
And they're always supposedly 5 years away from commercial viability.
Always. So why should anyone believe this sodium ion claim is actually going to impact their daily life? Why is shifting away from lithium to sodium actually a big deal for the listener's everyday life?
That skepticism is entirely warranted given the absolute graveyard of battery startups out there.
Wait, there are so many.
But if we connect this to the bigger picture, this specific breakthrough is structurally different because of the underlying chemistry.
Okay, how so?
Historically, the blocker for sodium ion batteries was energy density. Sodium atoms are larger and heavier than lithium atoms.
So they take up more physical space.
Exactly. For a long time, a sodium battery that could drive a car 450 kilometers would have been physically too heavy and large to even fit inside a normal chassis.
Oh, I see.
Hitting this metric now means they have finally solved the cathode degradation and the density issues that plagued all those early prototypes.
And the reason we care about replacing lithium with sodium in the first place?
A material abundance and supply chain geopolitics.
Ah, of course.
Yeah. Lithium requires extensive, highly localized mining operations. The global supply chain is centralized, it's fragile, and it's very tightly controlled.
It's a huge bottleneck.
It is the ultimate bottleneck. Sodium, on the other hand, is quite literally ocean salt.
Wow, it's everywhere.
It is universally abundant. Achieving parity in range and charge time with an abundant material completely severs our reliance on a scarce resource.
It completely rewires global supply chains.
Exactly. It drops the floor out from under the cost of energy storage, which makes everything from electric vehicles to massive grid-scale storage for wind and solar exponentially cheaper to deploy. It makes the tech far more resilient and accessible.
Okay, so the physical hardware is getting cheaper, and the energy to run it is becoming universally abundant.
Good news all around.
You'd think so. But when we look at the daily reality for the developers actually building this digital world, the environment inside these giant corporate ecosystems is becoming surprisingly hostile.
Yeah, the friction is getting intense.
It really is. There are two deeply frustrating reports in the briefing today. Over in the Apple ecosystem, developers are reporting that Apple has suddenly started administratively closing their radar bug tracking tickets.
Just randomly closing them.
Yes, and the only way to keep the ticket open is if the developer manually goes back in, redownloads the absolute latest beta version of the OS, tests the bug again, and verifies it still exists.
It is an aggressive shifting of the administrative burden.
It's ridiculous.
Reproducing a complex OS-level bug is incredibly labor-intensive.
Yeah.
To have a corporation automatically close a documented issue just to artificially lower their internal unresolved ticket metrics, that's a hostile way to treat the developers who are essentially doing free quality assurance for your platform.
It's infuriating. It's like calling your landlord to report a leaky roof, and a week later, the landlord just closes the maintenance ticket because it hasn't rained in a week.
That's exactly what it's like.
And they demand that you, the tenant, have to prove the roof is still broken. It forces the person experiencing the problem to absorb all the friction.
Which leads to massive burnout.
Exactly. And it's not just Apple. GitHub quietly updated its Copilot interaction data usage policy today.
I saw that one too.
Yeah, they're basically requiring users to manually dig into their settings and verify their allow GitHub to use my data opt-outs.
They are entirely relying on user fatigue.
Hoping people just give up.
Right. When you synthesize this Apple bug tracker friction with the GitHub data policy quiet update, you see the exact same pattern of corporate overreach.
Shifting the burden to the individual.
Yes. These massive ecosystems have achieved such dominance that they no longer have to compete purely on user experience.
They're just extracting value.
They are optimizing for their own internal telemetry and data harvesting, counting on the fact that individual developers are simply too exhausted to continuously fight back or re-verify bugs, or audit their privacy toggles on a weekly basis.
So with all this friction from the big players, how are developers pushing back? Like, where is the rebellion?
The workaround is to abandon the bloated architecture entirely, which brings us to Vitruvian OS.
Okay, Vitruvian OS.
Yes. This is a new desktop Linux distribution highlighted in the briefing, and its core philosophy is a fascinating form of technological rebellion. It is explicitly modeled after BIOS.
Okay, for those who weren't in the trenches during the 90s OS wars, which I assume is most of us, what makes the BIOS philosophy relevant today?
Well, modern operating systems are monolithic, right? They are bogged down by layers of legacy code, background trackers, and telemetry services that are all fighting for the exact same central processing resources.
Basically, they're bloated.
Very bloated. But BIOS was famously built from the ground up for pervasive multi-threading.
Meaning what, exactly?
It assigned dedicated processing threads to specific interface elements and data streams. That meant the system remained butter smooth and hyper-responsive, even under crushing workloads.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. By resurrecting this modular, multi-threaded philosophy, the creators of Vitruvian OS are essentially stripping away the modern corporate spyware and administrative bloat.
It's going back to basics.
Exactly. It is developers returning to first principles to build an environment that actually respects their hardware.
So we are shedding the massive bloated systems for lean, focused efficiency across the board.
Exactly.
But, you know, speaking of shedding heavy infrastructure, the most remarkable story in today's briefing is about escaping the ultimate physical limitation.
Oh, the antimatter story.
Yes. Physicists have literally taken one of the most volatile substances in the universe out of the laboratory for the first time in human history.
Transporting antimatter. It is an engineering feat that borders on the incomprehensible.
It really is. For you listening, let's put the mechanics of this in perspective. Antimatter annihilates the literal microsecond it comes into contact with regular matter.
Any matter at all.
Right. If it touches the side of a container, if it touches a stray molecule of air, if it touches a speck of dust, it completely vanishes in a burst of pure energy.
It's gone.
Gone. Keeping it stable inside a massive, stationary billion-dollar particle accelerator is already incredibly difficult.
It takes a huge facility.
So unplugging that containment system, loading it onto a truck, and driving it down a physical road without the antimatter touching the sides of the container.
It's insane.
It is like trying to successfully carry a lit match through a Category 5 hurricane without it going out.
That's a great analogy. The physics required to achieve this portability are staggering.
How do they even do it?
You are dealing with portable penning traps.
What's a penning trap?
A penning trap acts essentially as an invisible magnetic dormus. It uses a highly calibrated combination of magnetic and electric fields to suspend the antiparticles in an ultra-high vacuum.
So it's floating.
The particles are literally levitating. They are trapped in a field, never touching the physical walls of the cylinder.
That is wild.
And maintaining those superconducting magnets in that perfect vacuum while subjected to the physical vibrations of a moving vehicle, that means we have finally mastered absolute containment on a portable scale.
Which opens up a whole new world of applications, right?
Absolutely. This raises an important question. What happens to real-world physics research now?
Right, because before, you had to go to the antimatter.
Exactly. Previously, if an aerospace engineer or a medical researcher wanted to run an experiment using antimatter, they had to bring their entire operation to the particle accelerator.
Which is a huge bottleneck.
Massive. But now, the facility can ship the antimatter to the researcher. It unlocks the potential for ultra-precise, portable quantum sensors, novel materials testing, and diagnostics we haven't even fully theorized yet, simply because the material is no longer chained to a stationary facility.
So, what does this all mean? When we step back and look at this March 2026 briefing in its entirety, an incredibly cohesive narrative emerges for you.
It really does.
We are living through a definitive transitional phase right now. The massive established systems, you know, the trillion parameter LLMs trying to just memorize their way to intelligence, the fragile lithium supply chains, the bloated corporate operating system.
They're all hitting their limits.
Exactly. They're all hitting a very real brute force wall. But precisely at the edge of that wall, brilliant, scrappy workarounds are rushing in to fill the gaps.
We are seeing open source systems like ATLAs using smart triage to beat giant models.
Right.
We are seeing hardware prices plummet to democratize access, sodium batteries rewriting the physics of energy grids, and scientists literally bottling antimatter to take it on a road trip.
It's incredible.
It proves that progress isn't just a straight line of building bigger, heavier machines. The most exciting developments right now are about the smart, efficient application of resources and critical thinking under constraint.
And as we wrap up, I want to leave you with a brand new idea to mull over. We've seen today that artificial intelligence is hitting a logic wall in the purely digital realm, struggling to achieve fluid reasoning just by ingesting more text.
Right, the brute force wall.
But at the exact same moment, we are mastering the physical world in an unprecedented mobile ways. We're transporting antimatter, rapid charging sodium batteries, bringing massive localized compute directly to our desktops.
The physical world is catching up.
It is. So what happens when we start trying to force AI to pass digital coding benchmarks and instead point these hyper-efficient smart routing local models toward the physical world?
That's a fascinating thought.
If we combine actual hardware mobility with physical experimentation, will true artificial general intelligence actually be born in a material science lab interacting with the messy real world rather than sitting frozen inside a massive sterile server farm?
I guess we'll have to wait and see.
It is definitely something to chew on as you watch these incredible technologies converge. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems around you. Keep looking for those clever workarounds, and we will see you next time.